There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, get early access to Black Friday savings, up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Germanicus, Mark of Lejos. I am Gaius. We're by the Thames enjoying ourselves. We're at leisure. This is not an anxious time for us. We can see 2,000 years into the future, up to the limits of about the middle of the 21st century. It gets a little fuzzy about there, but, you know, we're Roman citizens, and we can't see the third millennium that clearly. But we can see parts of it and criticize it on the basis of what we know about the first century AD, our century, the success of the Roman Empire. Empires make claims. Empires are judged on whether they can back those claims up over a long period of time, not one battle, not 10 battles, not the campaign of one individual, but over time, many successes, many failures. And we come now to Ukraine making claims 2,000 years from now. Germanicus, I read from the headlines in London. This is, Ukraine may not be able to reclaim Crimea by force. Secretary of State Blinken claims some of Kyiv's war aims may only be achieved through diplomacy instead of military action. At the same time, there are been lists of equipment transferred from the U.S. arsenal to Ukraine either immediately or over time that suggest mounting an offensive. That would be the main battle tanks, but also specialized equipment such as bridging equipment, bridges that are capable of spanning, I'm told, about 60 feet, mounted on M60 chassis, so they're tank bridges. Also riverine boats, similar to what John Kerry commanded in Vietnam. Both of those would describe an army that needed to cross rivers or maintain authority on rivers during an offensive. There's other parts of the arsenal that suggest longer-range missiles, longer-range artillery. I mention all this because Ukraine is said to be capable of attacking Crimea, and Mr. Zelensky talks of it now and again as part of his mission statement. Your measure right now, attacking Crimea, is that a blow that the Russian forces, disappointed that they are in Donbass, can absorb?
Ukraine, as I mentioned a few minutes earlier, has been promised enough equipment in the form of tanks and artillery to form a handful of armored brigades. How many would depend on a number of factors, one of which is how many tanks do you want to assign to a brigade? And a brigade can be a weak armored brigade with a small battalion of tanks, or perhaps it can fill out its armored complement with more capable armored fighting vehicles like the Bradley, which the U.S. has given something like 50 to Ukraine. But if you take all of the tanks and armored vehicles promised, it's enough for several brigades, maybe even more than several. But the factors that limit the capability of these brigades, again, as I mentioned, are the ability to actually operate the tanks effectively and to maintain them. And this is a major issue with maintenance-heavy tanks like the Leopard. And how much artillery support? How many fires can you develop or deliver from each brigade? How sustained can they be? And finally, how many men can be trained to operate as an assault force? It's one thing to be pulled up in fortified positions and being willing to fight to the last man or forced to fight to the last man, as in Bakhmut. But it's quite another to launch a coordinated combined arms assault offensive. And I say assault because in the months since Russian forces withdrew from the far bank of the Dnieper and Kherson Oblast, they have been building several fortified lines of defenses, including concrete pillboxes, rows and rows of dragon's teeth, deep and wide trenches, berms, minefields like you wouldn't imagine. That's what the task is, to try and blunt an offensive. And it will blunt the offensive. It won't stop it if the defensive has enough capability and enough firepower. But it can severely damage the fighting potential of whatever attack groupings the Ukrainians are able to throw in. And if they do penetrate into the defenses, it becomes a trap for the attacking forces. This is the situation faced, for example, by the Wehrmacht at the Battle of Kursk. Now, the Wehrmacht actually was incredibly capable, and at least in the northern sector, had pretty much wiped out the Soviets standing in their way when the German army was pulled back by Hitler because he freaked out over the Salerno landings. But the fact is that a head-on attack, most likely, or at least it's expected to be in Zaporizhia, would, against tiers and repeated lines of Russian fortification, would be extraordinarily difficult and would result in a very high attrition, and the probability of a very strong Soviet enveloping counteroffensive or riposte. If we look at the offensive operations in which the Ukrainians were successful in the Kharkiv region and also in Kherson, Kherson was not a successful offensive. It resulted in enormous losses on the part of Ukrainians. And the only reason they took that territory on the far bank of the Dnieper was that the Russians decided on a strategic withdrawal. Then there weren't any Russians to stop them. And in the area around Kharkov, the Ukrainians took tremendous losses, and they weren't facing very many Russians, and they weren't facing fortified lines. And so they were able to take the territory. But again, those two offensives in the autumn represented the second army echelon that Ukraine had painstakingly assembled, and it was completely attrited by these offensives. Now they've assembled something like a third echelon that they can throw in, but it is almost as though it were a final gambit. And the defeat of the Ukrainian army in a failed offensive in Zaporizhia would lay Ukraine wide open to Russian forces to move quickly and with little opposition. And that would be a debacle for Ukraine and a calamity for NATO, given how NATO has staked its future and the U.S. has staked its world leadership on defeating Russia and Ukraine. So
what I'm hearing, Germanicus, is that going on the offensive is high risk for both general staffs. Is that how to understand this?
Yes, and it's more high risk the less depth of capability you have. So Ukraine is the most fragile force, and throwing a fragile force into an offensive, that's why I mentioned Pickett's charge, not because there's any analogy there in terms of forces or composition, time period, et cetera, but the idea of you have one last capability and you throw your reserves and shoot your bolt, that's not a good thing to do necessarily. Now, Russians have more offensive options and much more offensive depth, but that doesn't mean that they're going to want to risk the outcome of the war on overextension, trying to do too much, trying to take too much. So you do have a similar problem facing both armies, but their actual situation in terms of overall advantage in the war is extremely different.
Germanicus is Michael Vlahos. I am Gaius John Batchelor. We're by the Thames, reflecting on the risks and the advantages, if any, of both sides in the Ukraine conflict. There is another contest underway. And when we come back, Germanicus and I are going to discuss the moral high ground. Who has it? Who wants it? How do you maintain it? What is its meaning in a conflict that can be regarded as a civil war? This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
We use sunscreen para proteger la piel, ¿verdad? So why not be proactive protegiendo tu salud bucal también? Hola, mi gente, soy Amara La Negra. Y con el sistema de prevención activa Colgate Total, tú puedes ayudar a prevenir problemas bucales como las caries y gingivitis antes de que empiecen. The reformulated toothpaste, innovative toothbrush, and refreshing antibacterial mouthwash were designed to work together to be 15 veces más efectivos reduciendo bacterial buildup, la causa principal de los problemas orales en solo 6 semanas, starting in week 1, compared to non-antibacterial fluoride toothpaste and a flaxen toothbrush. Eso es prevention power, baby. Compra el sistema de prevención Activa Colgate Total visitando shop.colgate.com/total. Protect your oral health and be dentist ready.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.